and an oven and my furnace went bad one winter and I had a guarantee on it. Then I was out about $1,000 for labor, see. And I told him, I said, no, I said, you don't appreciate. And that's been over a year, I guess it's been about a couple of years ago. I haven't been back in this place of business. And
Can you tell me something about when you started in the coal mines,
Mr.? Yeah. I went in the mines, I guess. Let me think a minute. Wait a minute. I guess I was around 18. And they hired me and my brother and my first cousin.
Which brother?
Odell.
Okay, the oldest child.
Right. And that first cousin.
Well, how'd you get that job?
Well, the job was down here at White City.
Okay.
Now, other day when we went to Madisonville, remember I took this back road?
Right.
Okay. And when I hit, in other words, I went to back road and over to my right when I turned down there around that truck stop. You remember that truck stop down there around Morton Gale?
I think so, yeah.
Well, anyway, that road goes on back in that way, to White City, see. And we'd walk down there. Yeah. That's the only way you had to go, walking. And it was a dirt road. We walked down there. Well, superintendent needs some extra coal. So he hired all three of us. And we went to work on a night shift. And they had cars. I mean, they were monsters, too. And you shovel. Time you go in there until you come out. And had a guy come in there and pull the car out and put your new one in there, see?
So did you take a shovel with you, or they gave you?
No, they gave us a shovel.
Okay.
Yeah. I believe they did. I don't know. It's been a long time ago. But anyway, I'm pretty sure they must give it to a soldier to it and take us out of pay, because I didn't have no money nohow, you know.
He's going down there to make some money.
That's right. And we worked about, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months, something like that. And then he laid us off.
Why did he do that?
Well, it wasn't no demand for coal.
Wasn't no demand.
Yeah. And I stayed around here a while, then I went to Louisville.
Okay.
I come to working up there for a construction company.
How'd you find that job?
Well, they had a union hall where you'd go low.
Okay.
Somebody wanted somebody to work, they'd call in there.
Okay.
See?
Louisville had one of those, or they had one here?
In Louisville. See, I lived in Louisville then, see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you go up to Louisville to find work?
Yeah. Yeah, went up there to find work, yeah. A whole boat of train up there.
Okay.
And,
By yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. But see, I had a brother over there. My youngest, Milbert, was already living in Louisville, see.
Okay.
Milbert.
Okay.
And, I had an auntie living up there. And so I went up there. I never will forget the first day I washed cars all day long up there. 50 cents a car.
At a car wash?
Well, just around a garage. Wasn't no car wash.
Okay.
Just a garage, you know, where you could wash cars. And I believe it was on the outside, you see.
Okay.
And then I went down to this local union hall. And Quedlinburg, sitting there and got, I don't remember how many people. We went out there and went to work. And they was building government barracks.
Okay.
And I worked for them, clean on up till October in 41. Then I went in service. And after service, I come back through Louisville, but I couldn't make enough money. I was money crazy, didn't have no money, and my mind was paying more than anybody else. Man.
So you went in service in 41, came out, and when did you come out?
I come out in last of 45, first 46.
When were you in 3C's?
That was before then.
So you was in 3C's even before you, was that after your first coal mine job or before?
That was before.
Well, what'd you do in 3C's?
Well, in 3C's, it was Civilian
Conservation Corps.
Okay. Down in Russellville, they had this limestone rock. A lot of time we would work on those big rich people's farm down there.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little old hammer where we'd break rocks, and sometime we would work on land, you know, trenches and stuff like that, where the water would go here and yonder, you see. And that's what we did in the 3C's.
Did you work with other guys from around here?
Yeah, well, not. Yeah, of course, my brother, he come in there late on as I was coming out. See, they passed some kind of law that you couldn't stay in there over 3 years or something like that. Over 24 months, I believe it was.
That's how long you stayed in?
No, I stayed in 29 months because that law come into effect when I was in there. So they discharged us and took some more, but see, right after that, the war broke out, see.
So that's when you went
into
the Army.
Yeah. But see, in the meantime, I come out of 3C's and my brother went, and I believe he come out too, I believe. So you must remember that was in 39.
39.
Yeah, 39.
Was there blacks and whites in 3C's?
Well, no, they were segregated. You just had white, black, white officers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So y'all didn't work with whites at all?
No. You know, my most dealing with whites was when I went in the coal mine.
Okay.
And, of course, when I went in the mines, up there where I work, all your bosses was white.
Mm-hmm.
See? And you work with black. It might be some white guys in there, see, but that was hard work up there. The white man dodged it.
He didn't want to load coal.
No, he didn't want to load. And the coal was low, see,
okay.
About 36 inches high. You'd have some of them in there, but most of them in there, they kind of had the easiest job among. Of course, all the work in there was hard, but some of the work was harder than others, you see. But anyway.
What would have been the harder jobs, and what jobs did blacks not get to do so much?
Well, bossing, mostly. Bossing, and belts. See, they have guys walking belts, you see.
Check on the belts.
Yeah, and have a little shovel, you know. Clean up little spills on the belt, you see. And all the mechanics.
Okay.
They was white, see.
Mechanics kept the belt in order and...
Well, mechanics, they would work on equipment when it break down, see.
Okay.
And let's see. And how some guys in there, They didn't have no education, white guy. And they call him a gang leader. Mm-hmm. He carried several blacks off and worked them because he was white. Well, he didn't have mind forming paper. Okay. So they called him a gang leader, see? And they'd give this guy a note, but they won't done. Well, he'd give it to Willie Lovins, because he couldn't even read, see? Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, when they swapped superintendents up there, he went to a bigger mines, and they put another guy.
This still at White City?
No, this is Mannington, after I got out of the Army, okay. You see. And me and him worked together for a long time, but anyway, when he becomes superintendent, me and him always got along pretty good, so he told me, he said, I told him, I said, no, I said, when you get that position, you be like the rest of them. He said, no, only thing I'm looking for is tonnage. I said, I'm going to treat you right. I said, okay, time will tell. So when he got to be superintendent, he began to put me on a different job, you see.
So until this point, you'd always been loading coal?
Right. That's the face of the coal.
Okay.
Okay. And he put me on a, well, first I started working in the four boss's place when he was off.
That's, you know, the face boss?
No, that was the mine. Then guy that inspected the mine,
okay,
every morning before we go in, see.
Okay.
He going around about 4:30 or 4:00, inspect the working place.
And he's called the four boss.
Four, F-I-R-E, four, okay, boss. Right. Uh-huh.
Okay.
He would examine the working places and come outside before the regular shift went in, see, make his report. Well, when he was going on vacation or was off, I was working his place, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Steve's at about 30 now.
So they become to getting short of bosses. Guys were leaving there, going somewhere else, see. Then I began to work extra as a unit foreman.
What's a unit foreman?
That's a boss works on a unit. Each unit in the mine's got a number.
Okay.
Number 5 unit, number 4 unit, whatnot, see.
So that's an area? Of,
right, a certain area.
Someplace off the main, like you was,
yeah,
talking?
Right,
okay.
Right. And so this superintendent one that putting me on that job.
What was his name?
Whitfield.
Whitfield.
Wes Whitfield. He, then he brought me to the bottom. That's where you dump coal. The guy that was working down there, he quit.
And that's, the bottom is really at the top?
No, the bottom, you see, when you go down the slope,
okay,
when it level off,
that's the bottom. Okay.
And we had a big pit, all about big as this house, with a track over it.
Mm-hmm.
And a locomotive would come over there and dump cars that where they would trip the bottom, the door swing open, the coal would fall down the pit. Then they had a belt up under the pit, would carry it outside, see.
Okay.
But so I started doing that, and Whitfield left there, and this other superintendent come back. Well, he didn't know I had mine forming papers.
So you already had mine forming papers then?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I missed when you got the papers.
Well, I told you that other day because okay.
Yeah, you told it to him, though we didn't get it on tape.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you about it now.
These are my notes from the other day. Okay, here you go.
Huh?
I see where you tell me when you started working on the bottle.
Yeah.
Right here. Okay.
Okay, you want me to go through that now?
Yeah, tell me how you got to be a foreman.
Okay. Well, I inspected this, worked in this guy's place.
The fire
ball. So I came out one morning. The black boys raised Cain, mm-hmm. and some whites, mostly black, said he don't have a far boss purpose to inspect this mine. So Whitfield asked me would I go to school and make far boss paper. I told him yeah. But in the meantime, why go to school for one thing when you could go to school for the whole deal?
Mm-hmm.
Fall balls, bond phone, anything falls in that category.
Okay.
So I went, made first place papers. And
about what year was this? This in the 60s?
Yeah, let's see. It might have been in the first part of 70.
Okay.
Might have been. I think it was.
Okay.
So, then I worked extra as a boss.
Okay.
And he wanted to hire me as a face boss. But I didn't want to get out of the union. I had my miner's pension made, see. And, well, I don't like to put all my eggs in one basket, because one basket, they all break, then you're gone, see. So, I was pretty active in the union. And before that, during that time, no, a little bit before that, they brought me out of the mines as a district worker for District 23, UMWA. Well, all that was political. Cobal was running for presidency, so got one black, four whites, out of the largest locals union in West Kentucky. So when he got back in office, we went back to the mine, you see. But anyway, after that, inspected, job coming circulating around in this area. And wasn't no black coal mine inspectors, period, see. And they'd working for the government. So I took a civil service test, me and another guy, and they said we didn't pass it. We just got a little old note from the government saying, not pace, or I don't know, it's been so long. I didn't pay no attention. Then about a month and a half later, a guy from Washington named Rick Harris, he stopped over here in Mouthville at the Holiday Inn and called me. Mm-hmm. And said, Eve, said, I'm Rick Harris, I'm out of Washington, D.C. He said, I heard you want to become a federal mine inspector. I said, well, I was interested in one time. And I said, I didn't pass the test. He said, come over here and let me talk to you. And I didn't know him from Adam's apple. And he told me, he said, the reason you didn't get in, they didn't have no black inspectors.
They just weren't hiring no black
inspectors? No, they weren't hiring none.
And this was the 70s?
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait a minute.
Or a 60.
Yeah, wait a minute. Well, let's see now. I believe late part of the 60.
Okay.
Yeah, late part of the 60. But anyway, he said, well, sir, they wasn't hard no black inspector, but if you're interested in it, I'll see that you get in. I said, well, I said, I'm not going to give up my miner's pension. I said, I'm going to write Tony Ball a letter and see if it affects my miner's pension.
So I wrote him a letter, and he told the boy to answer right back and said it wouldn't affect my pension. See, I know Tony Ball personally, because when he'd come down here on a visit, I would be on the committee, you see.
Okay.
And so I went on in. And, well, let me back up just a little bit. When I started working for the district, I had been working about 2 weeks. I went over there one Monday morning, district manager told me, and said, Jimmy, I'm going to have to let you go. The men's can't get nothing out of you. You done messed up the barrel fund money. Asked me three questions, didn't give me time to answer. Said, the mine's on vacation then, see. Said, when the mine go back off vacation, you go on back to the mine.
And what's the barrel fund?
No, well, I'm gonna get to that.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask him a question, and he walked out the door. So I was talking to my local president, the president of the local union, told him about it. And he said, there's something else behind it. Well, one black, two or three whites got to some of the field workers out of office, told them I had took all the barrel fund money and messed it up. They couldn't get nothing out of me, see. And told them a whole lot of junk, and they told this guy about it, Austin, district president, see. So that's the reason he fired me, he said, see, because I think he was getting pressure from a lot of these white guys, because they put a black over at the work, see. So I wrote Tony Ball a letter. Told him that it was supposed to be organized labor. I said, the man fired me, and I don't believe a scab, that's what we call a non-union, a scab before a man like that. Well, they sent two international board members in here to investigate it. I went over there. My president, committees went with me. And they didn't make no decision. The ball had to make the decision, so I left. Out at the mine one evening, I got a call. This guy that was the president over there, they removed him, put another guy in there, see. And I went on back to work over there, see. And that really hurted me. I didn't think a guy would do something like that before you would investigate something. See, if somebody tell you something, if you're going to act on it, you get the details before you act on it. But he didn't, see. See? And I asked him at that meeting, I said, how come you didn't act on it? And he didn't say a word. I said, I guess you did it because I was a black. He still didn't say a word. But anyway, they moved him out of office, see, and put this other boy. But after Tony Ball got in to be president, we all went back to the mine, except one guy, and they made him president over a district, 23, you see. But anyway, now I get back to the... Where did I drop off?
About how you got to be a mine.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. And Rick Harris, is one called me to be a fellow mine inspector, because he said he's going from Washington to Denver recruiting minority mine inspector. But anyway, I got a letter from Barbersville, Kentucky. Said I'd be stationed up there. And I told my wife, I said, I ain't going to no Barbersville. Up in the eastern part of Kentucky, close to Virginia line. And that same next, must have been the next evening, Rick called me. Said, Jimmy, he said, I heard you got your assignment. Said, is there a problem? I said, no, it ain't no problem because I'm not going. He said, well, I'll tell you what. I said, go ahead and accept it. Let me see what I can do on this end. So, Childress was a district president. Rick told me that he saw him in Washington. So he asked him, said, how about Station Eves in Madisonville? Childress told him he couldn't do it. So Rick told him, all right. And he saw Childress as boss. I don't know, must be what they must have been in the same office or something. So he asked him. I said, yeah. I put him in Madisonville. Said, I'll call Childress now. He picked up the phone, called Childress, said, said, Rick got a friend down there in White Plain. I want you to put him in Madisonville District. Just told me, yeah, I'll be glad to do that.
You think they're trying to keep you out of Madisonville?
Yeah.
Why you thinking they wanted to be Madisonville?
Well, they didn't have none in Evansville, in Indiana, you see.
No black?
No.
Okay.
Didn't have none, see. And, but anyway, Rick said he saw Childress about 2 weeks later in Washington. So he walked up to him, told him, said, I was going to put these in Bathville all the time. Well, see, he wasn't going to put me down there. And I worked in Bathville office. Of course, I know the guy that was acting district manager because he used to inspect our mines, see. And he was a guy, had a big belly on the man. He had a hard time in that little old gold suite. And he was from Indiana, too. But I went on and inspected mines. See, when you inspecting mine, you don't deal with a little man. You deal with people who's got authority. They appreciate their job. And they know if they give you into trouble, you can make it hard on them.
Then was there a difference in working with whites in the mines before you became a mine inspector and after you became a mine inspector? What was it like?
Well, those guys up at Mannington, where I worked, when one of them come in a mine, most of them were new guys, never worked in a mine before in their life, see. They depend on blacks to learn them, see. Now, a guy that's been working in the mine, he wouldn't hardly come up at Mannington. He wouldn't do that kind of hard work, see. So if a man depending on you, you ain't gonna get no static from him, see. Now, I'm sure some of them had that in them, but they didn't show it.
Because the work was hard and dangerous.
Yeah, that's right, see. And you depend on one another, you see, and one guy in particular. I liked the guy.
And he's still over at Mannington?
Yeah. And he was bolting the roof. See, your rock is in layers like that, see. Layer here like that, see. When you bolt them together, it makes it thicker, you see. That keeps them from falling, see.
Top from coming down.
Right, especially minor pieces, see. But now you take a place fair from here to my garage, maybe 8 or 10 feet thick. Ain't nothing you can do about it, but listen for it. Cause it's gonna make noise for it to fall. Sound just like thunder, you see. And you know it's way up, you see. But anyway, this guy, he was running this bolting machine and got careless. We would put the bolts on 4 foot centers, see. Be one pin to another be 4 feet. Any way you go, you see, be 4 feet. Well, he running about 6 feet apart. So, and I said something to him, I said, you getting these pins too far apart. See, he was going to in the place and pin it. We come in behind him with the cutting machine. We cut the place. And after we get out, the guy going and shoot it. Then your loading machine going behind them. See, in other words, it's a rotation. You going there and do your thing, a guy behind you going there and do his thing, you see. And the last man in there is a loader, and he cleans up the place. He's just recircling all the time. See? And he got kind of hostile at me. And he was a white guy. And so I told him, I said, well, I said, if you don't pin it suit me when we go in there, we'll put a timber up. That's just a straight leg, you know, with a head on cowboy. And you wedge it up to the roof, you see. But anyway, about 2 or 3 months later, a piece of rock fell on him, wasn't big as this couch, and paralyzed him from waist down. And he went to the hospital, stayed in there for a while. Every time I go to the hospital to see him, he comes to crying. See? He know he did that on himself, you see. But he want to hurry up, get in a place, and get out, and sit and wait on somebody else going to do their thing, see. But, I mean, I felt sorry for the guy, but I don't know where he did it intentionally, just ignorant, you know. And then again, you find some guys, they don't want a black man to tell them nothing, see.
Was there ever trouble in the mines you worked in between blacks and whites?
You know, I guess once about, let me see, shit, I guess it's been 30 years ago or longer. We were riding in cars going into work, and this motor jumped off in the track, see. And this guy was sitting in the car. In other words, always was set down flat. Or if something happened, you could kind of brace yourself, you know. And a lot of guys would just sit upright and, you know, but anyway, the motor jumped off the track, and this guy fell over, and his ear hit the car and comes to bleeding, see. And this guy told the guy operating the motor, said, you'd go on too damn fast. And the guy said, I wouldn't. And he said, you would. And this white guy said, if you feel that way, do something about it. Then the section foreman, I believe it was, said, hold it right there. Said, I don't want to hear no more. So it was stopped right there. But the guy that got his ear hurt, he told the foreman that he wanted to go out and go to the doctor. And that's the only incident that to my knowledge. Now, we had one face boss. Nobody at the mines didn't like it. The superintendent didn't like it. And, well, he didn't come up through rank. See? What it was, his daddy, kind of a big shot in Crofton, and just took him off in the belt, put him over men's, you see. And I didn't like him. And superintendent didn't like it. He didn't like the superintendent. They get into it all the time. So he come down on the bottom where I was. And
this is back when you was working
at Mannington. Mm-hmm. find something on the bottom. Anyhow, me doing. See, I had a whole lot of leisure time sitting around, see, and he didn't like that, see. So he told me one evening, said in the morning, before coal began to come into the bottom, I want you to go out there and clean up on that slope belt, see. Well, I couldn't even see the slope belt from where I was working, see. So the superintendent had to go to the big office that morning to a meeting. And I asked him, I said, this slope belt's pretty dirty. I said, you reckon I can come out, shovel on a little bit? He said, no, man, no way. Don't ever leave that pit. Said, something hang up down there. Said, mess up the whole run. And he was right, see.
That's what the superintendent told
right. But this mine farmer want me to go out there and shovel on the belt. So we got walkie-talkies in the mines, you know. And so when he got up in the works, I was on the bottom, he called me over the loudspeaker. I know the superintendent was going to Madisonville. And he said, Eve, you been on that slope belt yet? I didn't say nothing. Said, do you hear what I said? I said, yeah, I hear you. See, he asked me again. I said, well, I got news for you. He said, what is it? I said, the superintendent told me you didn't have a damn thing to do with me. Your job was to get that coal down here to me. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the mines heard it. People on the outside heard it, see. And to cap it off, when I started inspecting mines, I'd go to his unit. Well, we had about five or six inspectors, knowed him, and didn't like him. We'd go to his unit and burn his butt. District man asked me, he said, Jim, he said, how did you and Johnny make it when he was at Mannequin? I said, not worth a damn. He never would send none of us back out to that mine where this guy worked. And the guy finally died.
Yeah. In the coal mine?
No, he didn't die in the mine. He died after he got laid off. Yeah, because the mine closed up. But, buddy, I stuck it into him rough, see. Now, see, he was denied that. He told me to go out there and shovel on that belt, see. See?
Did he act like he had told you?
Yeah, he would have done. He was that type of fella, see. See, here's something. When nobody don't like you in the mine, see, something badly wrong with you, you see. Mm-hmm. Nobody. I told the superintendent one day, I said, well, I said, I don't know what you're going to do. I said, Johnny ain't speaking to you. He said, well, I said, I'll tell you one thing. If that coal quit coming out of that mine, I'll speak to him. And he meant it, too.
Right.
Yeah, he meant it.
Why do you think in the mines there was so a little trouble between blacks and whites?
Well, I'll tell you what. When you're in the mine, you got your own thing to do, see. In other words, say if you were drilling the coal, you go in there and drill. All right, well, when dinner time comes, we all sit down and eat dinner together. But see, you working, and where you have trouble when people ain't working. They got time to shoot the bull, you see. But them guys over, as I tell you, most of them is the first time they've been on the ground was at that mine, you see. And most of them was farmed, come off from farm, you see. And they were hard working guys. Yeah. And in there, you go in there and you would do your work, see. Now, there I was on the bottom. I guess if you put all my work together, I didn't work 2 hours a day. I didn't work 2 hours a day. I had a seat just like this, and I would reach up and press the button just like that. Yeah, that's right. And then I was getting time and half a half an hour every day. Because, see, I wouldn't stop for dinner. Because if I stopped for dinner, the pit might get full. So he told me, said, well, we just give you time and a half. See? But my goodness. And I'd press a button till the guy on the outside start my belt. The bin's full of coal. And see, and then on the end, they had another belt was dumping into that pit. See? And all I do was sit there.
Good job.
Sure, I had a good job. Sure. And there was a ceiling was high as this was. Okay. I couldn't even reach the ceiling.
So it wasn't when it was low.
No. Nah. See, what to do to shoot out. Mm-hmm. See, they shoot out several areas in the mine, you
down
see.
At the bottom, it's the higher ceiling.
Yeah. See, yeah. See, in other words, just like they gonna, well, say if they go work on equipment, mm-hmm. See, big equipment. They were going to mine and shoot out an area and put a overhead hangar where they could stake stuff out of machinery, you see. And see, they would make those areas in the coal mine, you see. And that's where it was on the bottom, see. All your coal would come in there, you see. And I had chairs. See, when I went down there, it was just as filthy as it could be. Loose coal, coal dust everywhere. I went in there. I told the superintendent, I said, I'm going to get me some rough lumber. Because people come down there when I'm working, they just in my way, and I fixed these seats where they would be back out of my way, you see. And I guess it took me about a month and a half. I fixed seats up there and rock dusted, and it was just as white, cleaned back in there. Well, the guy would go back in there. When they're waiting on a man trip, they go back in there and sit down, you see. Yeah, so I ain't saying no. Had a lawn chair. It was where you could, you know, see the yard chair, them high back store. Yeah. I fixed one down there, and the general manager come in. Mind one day, I hear the master superintendent say, what are you doing with a chair like this in here? He said, that fellow over there built all these chairs. Yeah, and every time he come into mind, he grab that chair too. Yeah.
Well, was it different between whites and blacks out of the mines?
Oh, yeah. You see some of the guys that you've been working with. And now if they divide themselves, or they speak to you and come a little conversation. But if their wife was with them, they looked the other way, they wouldn't see you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now if you had your wife with you, he's all up in your face, you see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In White Plains itself, and in around White Plains, was all of it mostly segregated? Like, where could black folks go to eat and stuff like that?
Yeah, it was segregated to the T. Well, see, let me see. They had one or two restaurants. You could go in there and buy something, mm-hmm. but you didn't, you know, you didn't sitting there and drink. Of course, I was so small, you know, mm-hmm. and I think they had a little beer or something maybe under the counter that they, but see, White Plains, I don't think they ever sold whiskey in White Plains. Nothing but bootleg whiskey, see. We had a little incident here once, though. Used to be a swimming hole down this way. Mm-hmm. Well, on that road, we went to Madisonville. Back here somewhere. I don't know if you remember or not, but it's a creek down in there. And I learned how to swim with a gallon bucket. A gallon bucket had a lid on it, see, and it wouldn't sink, you see. We learned how to swim in a pond. But anyway, you go down that creek, when you get in it, it's about 10 feet deep, see. and he'd jump off from the bank into it, see. And that's where we'd swim. And the white boys would swim down there, see. And sometimes it wouldn't be over two or three of us, but it'd be 10 or 12 of them, maybe more, they'd be down there swimming, see. This particular time, we was coming away, and they sitting to go in. And they ganged up, was gonna run us away from down there. And a guy by the name of Lewis Drake, he picked up a stone and throwed in a bunch. And broke this guy's wrist. Well, his daddy was a big wheel here in White Plains.
The white boy got his arm broken?
Yeah, his dad was a big wheel, see. Well, his daddy know my daddy. My daddy had been trading with him for years. Well, just about all the people here in White Plains trade with him, see. And he know all these black people, see. And he know his son, see. And they thought he was gonna do something, and he told them, said, well, I know those black boys out there. And said, they wouldn't bother none of these white boys, because it used to be a little old, where we played ball, it used to be a little big ditch down there, mm-hmm. Water in there about a foot deep. We used to play in that water, see, and I was real small then, see. Wasn't another word said about it. And then, had a cow pasture out there. Now this boy was a little older than I am, but he had a brother around my age. And we played ball together.